One, two, three. Dancing on the floor.
That's Andrea Bonini, also known as Mop Mop, with something called Crunk, a very, very catching rhythm, I would say. A fusion of jazz, funk, and club music and sound effects. Bonini, by the way, is from Cesena, Italy, where he studied African-American and contemporary music and then moved to Berlin, where he now produces these wonderful concoctions in collaboration with noted artists from all over the world. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, March the 21st, and it's Free Your Mind Friday, as you know. So let's get to it. What's on your mind? 888-874-4888, and let's get to some very brisk exchange of views here today. Berkeley is up first, it seems. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hello.
Well, how are you doing?
Good.
Well, today is World Forest Day, and I want to wish the forests of the world happy World Forest Day. You know, we've been putting a tremendous load on the forest with our carbon, the amount of carbon we put out. Oh, there's over a billion cars that do two rush hours a day. All the planes in the sky, all the boats in the ocean, all the construction machinery, all the, you know, everything. We just put out so much carbon, so it's time to respect our forests, and they have to turn that. They're the ones who turn the carbon into oxygen for us, and so it's really important. So World Forest Day, and I have an idea to help the forests, and it would be also to help people who buy electric cars. And the concept is that, you know, usually I think that every electric car should be sold with a solar electric rooftop installation, so you just plug your car right into the sun. But many, many people who own electric cars don't have rooftops. So my idea is that companies could lease rooftop space on commercial buildings anywhere, even in California, and offer these people who own electric cars to buy solar panels and put them on their commercial rooftop spaces so as to nullify or to reduce their carbon footprint. So even though they're plugging their car into the grid, which usually is coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear energy, by putting solar panels on rooftops somewhere else to equal the amount of carbon they're producing, it's like canceling it out. It cancels it out. So that's my idea for car owners. And if you want to see electric vehicles, Google the words Plug-in Vehicle Tracker, PlugInVHicleTracker, Plug-in Vehicle Tracker. That's a website that shows all the electric cars, buses, trucks, motorcycles, you name it. It's all out there, and I think that it's time to plug our electric vehicles into the sun, especially if we're going to save our forests.
Well, thank you. You got us started today.
Thank you.
Dallas, Sarah, you're on the air. Are you there?
Oh, you, Therese?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. I did not hear the little static thing. Greetings to you, Yutrees.
Thank you. Same to you.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings to the PRN audience. I'll start off by wishing everyone an enjoyable weekend. Please go out and enjoy the first days of spring and do some things constructive. Yutrees, on my free my mind here is what I was going to speak on is this situation that's going on globally with the Ukraine unrest in the Crimea and all of this and the U.S. congressional people who are sitting on their hands silent. They're not saying anything because we all know this is election season and everyone is just trying to remain on the good side so that they can potentially get another 2-year or 6-year term if they're up for the Senate back there to suck off on the taxpayers' money. But it shows once again the hypocrisy of the American public as well as the Western press in particular, how they're pushing this going on over there. Oh, it's a democracy and these people, and we need to go in there. If it's such a democracy and if these people are all about saving themselves, they voted, they had a referendum, they voted in the Crimea to be a part of Russia. No, the election monitors, they were in there. They said everything was above board. There was no shenanigans. But yet still, we have seen every place where people have stand up for themselves and say this is what they want. You always find the powers of the West and corporations in particular finagling in the background want to go in there and says, no, this is not what they want. This is what we're going to give to you. Because the bankers are at stake. The bankers have a lot in there because the Ukraine is very important because the oil and gas that comes out of Central Asia, that comes up through there and funnels into the rest, into the West, Western Europe, it's a very strategic location because Shell Oil is already up in there with a bid in order to do what they have to do. Here it is, the United States is going to say, okay, they spent $1 billion, they're up the top of this regime. They're not looking at you here at our crumbling infrastructure in the United States, lack of employment, all of these things that is going on here. But yet still, these people that we keep repeatedly and everybody wants to say it's the Republicans' fault, it's all of their fault. I am sick and tired of people always wanting to play the right-left paradigm. It's all of their fault. Because as I said, once again, when you are putting people into office whose main financial campaign is coming from corporations, the same corporations that are going around the globe stealing resources and are the fat for all of these unrest and all of these overtoppling of government who are funding their campaign, all they're coming to you for is to tell you that you have to vote. These people are not getting money from you. They're not self-funding their campaign that runs in the millions. And you're seeing that they're coming in there at church most poor, and all of them, they have big banks. They all have big banks that they are sitting on. They are millionaires many times over, and they did not come from wealth. So you have
So Sarah, what should the U.S. position be?
The United States position, and we as the people, we need to let them know they need to mind their own business, you trees. This is causing destruction, and it's not only, it's making life very difficult for ordinary people like me and you trees, because before when I travel around this globe, and it was always a privilege to say that you're an American, now I got to hide myself and say, oh, no, I'm not. I don't know what you're talking about. You got to hide your passport because you are a potential risk. It's not these big people who got all these security guards and traveling on private jets to get in and out of the country and diplomatic passports. You, the ordinary people who are traveling, you are the ones who are the face, the direct representation of this, and you are the ones who are getting all of the slings and arrows because they're looking at you as being responsible for the unrest and the destruction in their country.
Because the counterargument to your point is the United States is a signatory, as many of the other countries are, to these conventions that call for involvement. It calls for some kind of intervention in a situation such as this. This is the rationale that the United States is not acting outside of its commitment by being a member of NATO, for example. It is, in fact, fulfilling its responsibilities under the terms and agreement of these agreements that it is a signatory to.
Exactly, Dutrice, that might be so, but then you have to look and see who is funding NATO, who is funding the UN. The UN Security Council, they get all of these puppets whose lively blood is tied to the West, and whatever handout that they feel that they need to get from the West in order for them to survive when they don't, because we're looking at these three puppet nations on the African continent who they put on in the UN Security Council to vote for certain resolutions when their situation is very shaky. So it's all about strong-arm, backhand dealing in these smoke-filled back rooms where they're telling them that you're going to do these things or X, Y, and Z, or you might see an invasion in your country, you might see your government topple. This is not people doing things of their own free will. These are muscles that are being used, and these are mafia tactics that are being used because the UN, NATO, whatever names they want to come under, the United States, as the so-called superpower, they're the ones who are funding them and who are pushing them and giving them the instructions to do what's being done throughout the world as we see it.
No question about it. Can't argue with you there, that's for sure. Thanks, Sarah, for your call today.
Thank you, Utrecht, and I'm glad I got it off my chest now. It's much better.
Now you can have a free weekend. Dallas is safe now. 888-874-4888 is your number to call. Let's hear what's on your mind. So many things are going on. I've been watching the coverage, the nonstop coverage of this flight that CNN thinks that it was going to break the news, but there's no news yet to report. But there's been comprehensive, oh my gosh, I watch it and it's so obvious what is going on. I wonder what your thoughts might be about that too. 888-874-4888. We tackled this week, just yesterday as a matter of fact, two really incredible views out of Chicago and out of Detroit about public schools. And the thing that was impressive was that there was an agreement that this is a nationwide struggle. And we've been saying that on Lead Stories. This is a huge problem, a nationwide problem, that this president decides it could be solved with I kind of chuckled when Karen Lewis of the Chicago Teachers Union remarked that the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, had a bachelor's in sociology, and therefore, in the eyes of President Obama, he was eminently qualified to be Secretary of Education. Hello, Phoenix. Craig, you're on the air.
Hi. This is Craig Phoenix. I just got through listening to Sarah, and I just have two words. It's called economic slavery. I really think that we export that. Not only do we export it, but we have it here in this country really bad. And for instance, the IMF, the U.S. is tightly tied to the IMF. And once you take a loan from the IMF, it's almost like you'll never get out of it. You'll always be in debt. And the only way you'll get out of it is if the debt is forgiven. Columbia, they took an IMF loan a few years back, and part of the deal was that they would produce X amount of coffee for export to help pay back that loan. And so what the government did is they made it illegal to have subsistence farming on your property. So all these people that were growing their own crops just to get by were either slapped in jail or fined, and they were told that they could only grow coffee, and if they wanted to eat, they had to import their food from other countries. That's just one example. Wow. Greece took a IMF loan. So now they have a hole they'll probably never get out of. And we have the same thing going on in this country. Just look at the examples of Detroit, probably soon to follow Chicago. Mm-hmm. I grew up just about 59 miles north of Detroit in Flint, Michigan, and they also came under that bankruptcy thing where they, the governor put these selected people in charge of the city temporarily to help them get their books in order. So it's a messed up deal, and I just wanted to relate that. So when Sarah gets in a rant, I can totally agree with everything she said.
Well, thank you very much, Craig.
You're welcome.
For endorsing the rant from Phoenix today.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Columbus, Rick, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. All right. Yeah, I think he was walking. It sounded as if he was walking, as he was, the previous caller.
Yeah, I hope the IMF didn't cause him to lose his breath.
He's on the run, right? So this may be a bit esoteric. But the issue of racism and things like that. I've spoken to you before. There was an issue maybe a little more than 2 weeks ago where a Florida person put out a sign on his yard, like a campaign sign for Ku Klux Klan drive, and also accompanied. He put also a noose out in his yard with the sign, and asking for, you know, anyone wants to join the Klan or anything like that. And so a lot of people said that it was racist for him to do that. And I'd like to ask your opinion, if you've heard it before.
If I've heard about this man trying to
basically
recruit for the Klan, it's happened so many times before, sure.
Sure. Do you think that's racist?
Well, I don't know if that is racist. People will now say, I think it is, it's just plain undiluted ignorance. And yes, it is racist. It is racist in the sense that the consciousness that informed the action is steeped, is just dripping with racism.
Okay. I understand.
Are you thinking of it more as a freedom of speech thing than an expression, an overt expression, designed, by the way, to be provocative, designed to create tensions, and designed to create instability in a community? It's an act of provocation.
A divisive act.
Yes, it's a provocative act.
Sure. Many people find what I understand to be true very offensive, because I personally don't think it's racist. I don't think hanging a person from a tree, a black person from a tree, a white person hanging a black person from a tree is racist, because you can't prove it. You know, a couple weeks ago, I spoke to you, and I spoke of this philosophy that I have, and you found it interesting. And what I had said was that nothing has ever been broken as proof of anything. And so, technically, if you hang a person from a tree, any person from a tree, because of the color of their skin, that's actually not proof you believe it. Because there's no proof. You're simply splintering society and calling it something else.
It's no proof of racism?
No.
What is it a proof of, then?
You're splintering society. That's what you're doing. That's, you know, for example, you know, if a person says they don't believe that women should have abortions, you know, because of their religious belief, but that's not proof that to undermine a woman's right to choose is not proof that you believe it, because you're splintering society. What happens is it actually is requisite for looting resources. It's a bigger picture. That's what's happening.
Really?
It isn't. You know, I've been.
What happens when it happens to you?
I was just going to say, I've been, you know, I don't know if you allow the N-word on your
what
show.
What would it be interpreted as when it happens, let's say, to you? I don't wish it.
Let me
explain. But let's say, how would you then categorize the action if it were directed at you?
If, I don't know if you allow a person to say the N-word on your show. Do you allow that?
No, I don't like the word.
Okay. Well, I know, I'm African-American. And I know why I'm called the N-word, but it has nothing to do with race. You know, that's how you splinter society. It's actually an economic stance.
Go ahead. There's a lag between the both of us because of the internet. Let me ask you.
Sure.
How many instances do you know in which people literally proceed in this organized fashion to do this act of burning crosses and the noose and, you know, all
sure.
the trimmings of that kind of behavior, if it is not in some way deeply rooted in racist notions about their power and authority to do it by virtue of their racial standing in the society and their belief as a result of that, that they have greater power to do these things
sure.
To other people who clearly they believe are not powerful enough to resist them.
Sure, it happens all the time. I'm with you, but that's not proof. You see, nothing can be broken as proof of anything. You can't, if I said I was a strong man, I couldn't break a toothpick as proof. It's mathematically impossible.
I think you're climbing way up a tree here, and what you're trying to do is be extremely existential. If a tree falls in the forest and you don't hear it, does it really fall? That kind of
no.
Yeah, that's where you're going.
No, I'm not.
You say you're an African American man.
Yes, I am.
Do you recognize racism at all? Does it as a concept, as a credo, as a warped sense of principles, if you could use those two words in the same thing, do you recognize that it actually exists as a fundamental thought process with many people?
Let me say this. Let me put it to you this way. If racism were a religious tenet,
I asked you the question. Don't rephrase or recast the question I asked
okay.
you. Do you believe that people hold to these tenets based on the concept of the superiority of one group of people and consequently the inferiority of another?
I understand that people who believe that can't prove they believe it.
No, but I'm not asking about people. I'm asking about you. Do
you
believe racism as a concept actually exists?
No.
Okay.
No, because you can't prove it. You can't prove race. You can only undermine society for not accepting the claim. That's not proof.
Okay.
That's
so
what
then,
I'm saying.
Let me
so
ask
it's
you,
okay.
then, if you can't
person,
prove race, let's
right.
just say, and
sure.
we know, we are clear about this notion of racism. Let
sure.
me just acknowledge the existential part of your argument. I acknowledge that race and racism, these are concepts and false social and biological constructs. I get
sure.
that. However, it still has been transmuted into a credo that is at the root of the conduct of individuals in our society. They
sure.
have adopted, even false as it is, as
sure.
amorphous as it has been made very concrete to them, and not
sure.
just to them, but to the laws of the land, none other than the U.S. Supreme Court. These are very, very intelligent people.
Sure.
And they have come up with a construct. They put it down in writing. Racism exists. And they wrote it. They wrote all these laws. And right. we have all these people misbehaving and doing really evil things to each other right. on the basis of this false construct that they have made real. So now right. the question is, on an esoteric way, as you use that word, you can sure. say, well, yeah, does it exist? Does it really exist? Yeah, the answer is yes, it does.
I say it does. I say, you know, I've been called, you know, or been told, hey, I hate N's. I'll say the N letter. I hate yeah. N's. And then I say, here's $100 that says you can't prove it. You mathematically cannot prove it. It is impossible. You can only.
I'm amazed that you actually, after somebody expresses that view, that you would actually engage them in conversation.
Because I have to. if you don't.
Yeah,
I mean, to, a level,
to be fair,
to a certain level, sure, sure. Not everyone, but, you know, I face this every day. Every day. You know? I could give you 100 examples. But the clearest one for me, when I go through Facebook or if I go through a history book or things like this and I see a dark-skinned person burned hanging from a rope and you have 3 dozen whites walking around as if to say they're towing it at Wendy's, you know, that's not proof you're racist. You're simply splintering society and that's why, that's how you're able to loot resources. That's how you're able to... you know, this fracking to no end or all of this. It's
but when you globalize the concept and you
sure.
see how uniformly this so-called esoteric thought process that you're trying to prove to me, this does not exist. Everywhere such behavior has occurred, it has been rooted in one way or the other in the belief of superiority over those who are not human, those who
sure.
deserve to be exterminated. It
sure.
was even before the wonderful religious pilgrims got to the New World.
Sure.
They knew
sure.
even before they got on the boat that whoever they met deserved to die because they were
sure.
savages. All right.
I am with you.
I mean, if you go in with the existential thing about racism being existential, I will differ with you 100% because we have way too much information to suggest to us that for a large segment of the population of the world, unfortunately, these amorphous things that you would regard as amorphous and existential are very real. They're made very real, and they are made to be at the root of the thinking and the actions, the thinking
sure.
that informs the actions of people. So yes, it exists.
Sure, but it is groundless. I mean, if you understand what you just said to me, if you understand that, then perhaps, well, not perhaps, but also consider that the planet is melting beneath our feet. And that's one of the reasons it's happening, because the narrative doesn't work. Regardless of if you have 1 billion people committing atrocities, you can't break anything as proof of anything. It has never happened in all of human history up until this very moment. If you, whatever it is you understand to be true and it is hidden, you have to put things together. Nothing can be torn apart. That's
okay.
what I am saying.
Well, Rick,
and so,
I'm sure
so a person,
somebody
a person,
is going to take this on today.
Right on, sis. Right on. Fair enough.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a good weekend. Yep.
You too. L.A., DX, you're on the line.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay.
You guys almost had me off track of what I wanted to call in about. I'm not going there with you, though. So, not today. We'll cover that another day. Pretty interesting, though. I called in. I actually wanted to talk about a couple of things today on Free Your Mind Friday. I wanted to say hello to everybody out there that's listening and give you a little bit of good news, Yatrice. Of course, you know I tell everyone I know about the show. We have 3 new listeners today.
Yay! That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, so just send a shout out to them, Eric, Dania, and Patrick. I was calling to say that, the first thing I wanted to let everybody know about is a documentary that I'm seeing called Garbage Island. Now, this can be viewed on Vimeo, YouTube, just search it. It's called Garbage Island. And basically, the concept is, I know a lot of the listeners have probably heard of what's called the Pacific Garbage Patch. And it's almost like an urban legend. You get so many different stories of what this actually is. And in my mind, before I saw this documentary, what I thought it was a bunch of floating plastic out in the Pacific Ocean between California and China, basically. I thought it was just a massive amount of garbage. Some say that it's like the size of the state of Texas and things like that. So I'm watching this documentary, and this team of journalists goes out on the boat with the captain and the crew to the middle of the Pacific Ocean to check this out. And it's a long voyage, of course. So they get there, and basically, I won't give away the whole movie, but it's not like we think it is. It's now, keep in mind, this is way out in the middle of nowhere where few people have ever even been. So they get there, and what it turns out to be is worse than what we actually think it is, because it's not a massive island of floating plastic. It's basically the plastic is... you can't really even see it from the top. You have to go down into the water to see most of it. And it's not just whole plastic bags and whole milk cartons and things like that. Actually, the plastic has started to break down and become part of the ocean itself. In other words, it's breaking down to the basic polymers and things like that, and it's like a toxic soup, where we have all these chemicals, bisphenol A, all kinds of other PCBs and things like that, where even certain species of fish and others, like jellyfish and things, have adapted to having these chemicals and things in the water. So it's worse than we even think. It's becoming a part of the whole eco structure there.
Yes.
And that was really, really frightening to me.
Actually, you know what? This is what they did as the alternative to paying to dump garbage.
Right.
New York City and many cities, for example, would pay Haiti. And this went on for many years. And they would dump the garbage on barges and whatnot and take it to Haiti and dump it there. But they
Absolutely.
Would have to pay for that. So Haiti actually was paid to have its ecology completely messed up. But then, of course, corporations being corporations, they figured, well, why do we have to pay? Why don't
Right.
we just go someplace where we could just dump it and we don't have to pay anybody? We only have to just make sure that we're not spotted, we're not seen. And
so
that's how that happened.
Right. All this garbage, all this plastic, you know, one of the main points I got from the documentary, the captain of the boat, who originally was, I believe, the guy who discovered this 40 years ago, he said that that Mother Nature is trying to spit this plastic out. That's why it washes up on beaches and all this other stuff. But if she can never spit it out, quote, she can never spit it out if we keep putting it in. You know, and that's what's basically going on, and it's actually becoming part of the whole. It's in the food chain, basically. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I just want to tell people, think about recycling and using plastics over and over if you can. And I know that we say those things, and you know, everything involves plastic nowadays. So, you know, watching a documentary like that really just brought it home for me. It's like if you can't see something, it's almost like it's not there. You know, we're just so careless sometimes. And also, the last point I wanted to make.
Kind of quickly, please.
I will. We had two very important topics on your show this week, the post office and the charter school. And they're using the same model. This is the same model they use to make governmental agencies and quasi-governmental agencies seem inferior, bankrupt, or incompetent. And then they just go in and try to make the money that these places are making because they want their hands on the money. And this lady that you had on there from the charter school giving that speech or whatever she was doing, she's just interested in money. It's just the same model they use. And if we lose the post office and we lose all our public schools, we're going to be, you know, messed up. We're going to be a lot worse as a society. You know, you never appreciate what you got until it's gone. But when that post office is gone and you have to pay $5 to send a letter, we will miss it, definitely. So thank you, Beatrice. You have a great weekend.
And thank you for bringing three people into our family today. Thanks so much. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
How are you doing? Two comments. One of them is I wanted to say something about what Sarah said before. But before that, I would like to say that the gentleman that you had from the retired post office, his name is John Dennis. Actually, we belong to the same group in Occupy Wall Street, so we meet every Friday. And I actually told him that I heard him on PRN, and he wanted to know the station and all that. So I hope that he's listening today because he told me, I wanted to listen to the station. So I hope that he's listening. And then you also have a professor that he said that when he was talking about the post office, he said, I get very emotional. If you wanted to see somebody and really get an emotion about talking the post office, what is being done, you have to see John Dennis. Oh my goodness, he's a really, really a fighter. Last year for May Day, there was an action done in one of the stations here on 14th Street and First Avenue, on one of the post office. And this year in May, everybody who's listening, we're going to be out there May Day at Union Square. So anybody who's listening from New York, we're going to be there starting, I believe, at 12 o'clock. But all of us are going to gather to march at 5 o'clock. So, but I just want to say that. But I just wanted to say this about what Sarah said, and you tell me if I heard wrong. Sarah said that when she used to go around the world, she was proud to be an American. I thought that's what I heard. But now it's like you had to hide yourself.
I don't think she was saying it about herself. I think she was saying this is the average American. You know, traveling around, you're proud to say that you're American, but now you really have to be careful.
Okay, but I do have to say something about that. I agree with everything that she said, but I have to disagree with that part. The fact of the matter is that we have the Internet. United States, this government, have been doing the same thing that they have done in Ukraine for years and years. And if people don't believe, you just have to study the history. I believe they went in 1918 into Haiti, and they did. What the difference now is that we have the Internet. We have instant information. And now we see what the United States of America is doing around the world. That is the difference. And that's why people around the world, citizens around the world, now they see what United States, and with all this information that we are being exchanged through the Internet, now we're seeing what is being done in other countries.
Very good point.
That's what I believe. I do agree with everything, but that is the part that I have to disagree with her. And I just wanted to say the last thing. I have a family member right now in Moscow, and that person, he said when he goes to a certain area, he won't say that he's an American. He'd rather don't talk because, yes, sometimes you are afraid. That's what I have to say. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ali, for your call today. Okay. This in from Nathaniel, he says, any country, just adding on to Sarah's comment, any country that threatens the supremacy of the U.S. dollar must be destroyed, like Iraq wanted, Syria wants, Russia wants, and any other up-and-coming contenders such as Brazil, South Africa, China, etc. So that was this.
On the air. We just had a little issue down here where I am. If it rains a little bit, things go crazy. And we had a little boo-boo there with our connection for a minute. But you're on the air. This is Lead Stories.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay, great. Was that James Brown?
No, it's Mop Mop.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, anyway, I really agree that the internet makes things more transparent. That's one point I wanted to say. I'm walking around again, a few trees.
Okay.
when Siri and I were in Hawaii, there was a thing on NPR about from the University of Hawaii. They were catching tuna, and they were analyzing the blood and the tuna, and they found plastic particles in the blood. So I agree that that's in our food chain now. The thing about the post office, one thing I'd like to say about that is it's like a land grab. And so is the thing with Detroit. So is the thing with the public school system. And then I hear Biden talking about Ukraine saying it's a land grab. And I just think that's so hypocritical. So that's another point. The other thing was the racism thing. I agree that we have that label out there, but a more general term, I think, is the exceptionalism and entitlement. Now, my father was very racist when I grew up, And I'd like to think I'm not, but it does get programmed into people. Now, what's interesting about that is part Native American, and, you know, we used to talk about how the land was stolen and things like that from the Native Americans, and but then my father would go on and think he was entitled or somewhat better than other people just based on their race. So I thought that was kind of strange. So that's another point I wanted to say. I guess, so I just think that racism is a label that's out there, but that whole idea of exceptionalism and entitlement is a more general term that people can probably apply to themselves. And I think it's an attitude, and I do agree that it's pretty hard to prove things like that because it has to do with someone's, how would you say it, their intentions. And intentions are hard to prove. So,
well, the intentions, I mean, what we're looking at here is the end result of one's actions. The intentions, you know, somebody may not mean to kill you, but your being dead is not an esoteric issue, is it? You know, if you're the person who is dead, it means that whether they intended or they did not intend, it doesn't change the fact that you're dead.
I agree.
The mitigating circumstances of people say, well, intention wasn't there. But when we talk about these things that inform action, this is why people look at mitigating circumstances.
Yeah, and I agree with you. What the other thing is, you know, when someone's hung on a tree and lynched, you know, that to me is murder. You know, no matter how you cut it or slice it. If you find out their intentions were that whole idea that they were somehow entitled or exceptional because race came into play, now you can call it racism. And obviously on the surface it does look like that. But it really does, in a court of law, get hard to prove. But there are laws about that now, so it kind of makes it easier. The hate crime laws and things like that.
It's not hard to prove at all. I mean, that's the whole history of the United States. If you understand, all of this is occurring in the context of the apartheid type thinking that went into the formation of the United States as
a nation. Oh, I know, and I totally agree.
So, I mean, if we choose to just take that out of the equation, and now we arguing about or we debating these amorphous concepts. These are not amorphous concepts. These are concepts deeply rooted in the thinking that went with the formation of the country and codified by law. It wasn't enough that these awful ways of thinking were rampant within society. They actually codified it into law.
Well,
these people are real people, and these people are not. These people are whole people. These others are three-fifths.
Oh,
these
I know. And you can take the whole thing with Jewish folks, different ethnicities, and things like that. You can apply that to a lot of people. But then if you take it to an extreme, now you get into this idea of the thought police, you know?
No, I don't.
Well, it's like we think that you did this because you're a racist or whatever it was. And now, you know, a whole different, like when it comes into hate crimes, a whole different purview comes into play. So...
Well, that's why they have the category. They put a category of hate crimes because, again, that basically goes to the business of intention.
Right.
And that the law has decided that the time has come to express zero tolerance for a certain mentality that was pervasive and still remains so. Simply
yeah,
because it's
you know,
in the books as a hate crime doesn't
I know
change
a lot
that.
Of transgender people here in Phoenix, you know, they're acquaintances. So I knew them from work or whatever. And, you read in the paper how some of them are just flat out murdered on the sidewalks here in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And later on, you know, they try to prosecute them on hate crimes. If they catch the person that did it, sometimes they don't. They try to prosecute them on hate crimes, and sometimes it's unbelievable. The whole thing gets thrown out of court. I mean, the fact of murder and everything else. I just don't understand this stuff.
This happens quite a bit. Thank you so much, Greg, for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Laura from New Jersey, you're on the air. Hello, Laura?
Yes, hi. Sorry, let me turn down my radio. There's a delay, so I apologize.
That's okay.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to get into this particular discussion. I'm not sure I fully understood what the bottom line, the point was of the whole esoteric argument on, you know, whether you can prove something is racism or not. But it just, I'm not even sure it's that significant, although I don't mean to be rude to that gentleman at all. It's certainly thought-provoking. But for me, I mean, you look at the KKK, and how many white folks has the KKK hung from trees? You know, burned, maimed, and castrated. Clearly, this particular behavior by them and their perspective is meant strictly to terrify people of color. And, you know, putting a cross on your lawn or a noose, this is, you know, and I remember that the whole situation recently with the University of Mississippi. I mean, this is a terroristic act. And the KKK has been listed as a terroristic organization. Yet there seems to never be any penalties when they do these acts that are meant to put their neighbors and the rest of society that doesn't look like them in a state of absolute fear. And it's, you know, it's their behavior is meant to declare that we don't perceive you, people of color, blacks in particular, as people. So we are letting you know that we can do anything we want to you, anything that occurs to us, any evil act. And obviously, they're also declaring that they feel themselves above the law, that somehow the fact that murder is illegal is a crime punishable.
I'll tell you one of the reasons that they believe that they're above the law is that the Klan, and the way it started, the Klan was the law. The Klan were members of the law enforcement community, and so there were sheriffs, and there were sheriff's deputies and so forth. The Klan was the law. So it grew out of that mindset that on both counts, both as a social control mechanism and also as the authorities of the law, they had absolute right to do whatever it is they wanted to do. The Klan was the law.
Absolutely horrific. But they're not the law today. And
yes, they are. And when you go in the South, the Deep South, you find that the remnants are still very, very much there.
But if they are listed as a terroristic organization, what amazes me, and I know it probably doesn't amaze you and others who may have come from the South and experienced this, I haven't been in the North, you know, my whole life, but I cannot understand how an organization like that can be listed as a terroristic organization and then do symbols of acts, perhaps the act itself. I mean, you call it free speech, but when you put up a noose, when you burn a cross on someone's lawn, you are making a declaratory statement to those individuals. And those acts, I cannot understand why there's no fine, why there's no imprisonment. When you do something like this, to me, there's no doubt that it's not free speech. It's a terroristic act. And
well,
I don't understand why you're not penalized.
Way, some jurisdictions have as a definition of hate crimes, not just the act of the crime itself, but also the suggestion or the symbolisms and the context in which these things occur, including the nooses and the literature and all of these other things that are meant to or that are used as a way of intimidating people. So they include that. Some, I don't think it's universally defined that way. In some cases, people still have, you know, they hide behind the First Amendment. But for the most part, I think that these symbols or badges of slavery and badges of terror are defined also as part of the hate crime.
Well, thank goodness for that, in small pockets. But
yes.
The truth is, I think as people, I mean, if we want to really begin to address this hideous disease of racism that I think is pervasive in our country, I think as people, regular people, whatever color you are, I don't care if you're striped or chartreuse, we need to stand up and just say, no, we have zero tolerance for it. Period.
I agree with you wholeheartedly there, Laura. Thanks so much for your call today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Well, we've come to the end of our program, and I certainly enjoyed it. I like the idea that we're getting more targeted with our opinions and that everybody has something to contribute, even though, you know, we may not agree. But I love the idea that we respect each other's points of view and we are interested in what the journey was to views that we may not necessarily agree with. How did you get to that point? And or the exact opposite, views that you do agree with. It's good to find out what the journey was there too. We have to engage each other with great respect, of course, but we have to engage each other in this kind of dialogue because it's long overdue. We really do need to ramp that up a bit, which is why I really believe that while we're on the air for 5 days a week, one day at least belongs to the listeners to exchange their points of view. So next week, a bunch of really good programs. I hope you will, of course, stay within. And I do want you to do what DX did and tell as many people as you know about PRN.FM and about this program. That's the one thing I'm going to do in a very, very proactive way to help grow this outlet and to bring more and more people into it and to bring a sense of community. This is very important to me. This is the kind of work I've been doing all my life, bringing people to issues and bringing issues to people. So I want to thank you so much for joining me in that effort. Tell as many people as you know about PRN.FM and about your favorite program, Lead Stories with Yours Truly. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. You can certainly reach me at leadstories@gmail.com and on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Now that you've freed your mind, you are free to have a great weekend. Please do so. Enjoy yourself. See each other on Monday. Thanks.
Time goes on. Dancing on the floor. Time goes on. Dancing on the floor.